Good morning, afternoon, or evening. No matter what time of day you're watching this, we're glad that you're out of the bitter cold and joining us as we celebrate the Epiphany. Can you remember the last time you had an epiphany? One of those aha moments in which you suddenly understood something in a new or much clearer way? Sometimes our epiphanies are simple, yet useful insights that we gain about ourselves or the world around us. Other times, they are life-changing. Well, today, many churches are commemorating what is called the Epiphany, a celebration of God being revealed to us through Jesus coming into the world. The scripture traditionally used on this occasion is the story of the Magi. When churches observe the Epiphany, it is typically done on the first Sunday of the year. But technically, the official date in most Christian denominations is January 6th, the 12th day after Christmas. Now, the story of the Magi is obviously a very familiar one. We have read it or heard it read numerous times. We have seen it reenacted in Christmas programs year after year. We have sung songs about it. Still, there may be some takeaways from this familiar story that are worth looking at as we begin this new year. Let's hope so, anyway. To start, we should acknowledge that this is one of those times that the essence of the story is much more important than the details or the lack thereof. That is because this is one of those Bible stories that has been enhanced over time as artists and early theologians have taken upon themselves to fill in the details that were not provided in the Bible. I, for one, think that's just fine. In fact, I appreciate it when artists take a certain amount of poetic license to heighten the effect of their work. In this case, for instance, the Bible does not say how many Magi came to visit Jesus. We know that it was at least two, because plural nouns and pronouns are used. But that is all we really know. In Eastern Christianity, which has some of the oldest churches in the world located throughout Asia, Greece, Turkey, and Northern Africa, tradition has it that there were 12 magi. In the earliest artwork found in ancient churches, two, three, or four magi were portrayed. In Western Christianity, primarily those denominations that stem from Europe, we use three as the number of magi because somewhere along the line it was felt that since there were three gifts, there must have been three magi in the Bible story. In the 6th century, they were even given names, and later the Catholic Church named them as saints. So that was it. Three it was. And that could be, it's as good a number to use as any. But for all we know, maybe some gifts just weren't worth mentioning. And so the gospel writer only listed three out of however many gifts were given. We really don't know. But note that the number of magi does not alter the essence of the story. Also, most historians believe that the magi were most likely from Persia, or what is today Iraq. They almost certainly were not from the Orient, despite what we sing. But again, where the Magi came from does not affect the story. Furthermore, it is highly unlikely they were kings. The word Magi, used in Matthew, is also found elsewhere in the Bible to mean astrologers or even sorcerers, not kings. By the way, the term wise men came about because that was the word selected as the translation for magi in the original King James Version of the Bible over 400 years ago. And is still used in some translations today because it is so embedded in our Christmas stories. Anyway, the magi most likely were priests from Persia, often responsible for interpreting dreams. At one time, the Old Testament character Daniel was in charge of the Magi, back when many Jews were living in exile in Babylon, and then that was overtaken by the Persians. It is thought that perhaps the Magi in our story studied the writings of Daniel and other ancient prophets, and through that study, they became familiar with the prophecy of a coming king of the Jews, a Messiah. And that is why they believed something was important was happening when they saw that mysterious star, or an alignment of planets, according to some, in the western sky. Most historians place the time of their visit at 1 to 2 years after the birth of Jesus. They visited Jesus and Mary in a house, according to Matthew, not a manger. Now, most theatrical productions include the Magi in the manger scene, which makes total sense as compared to asking the audience to come back in a year or two for the wise men scene. That's artistic license. And in fact, it enhances the Christmas story to have both the Jewish shepherds and the Gentile Magi worshiping the baby Jesus together as he came into the world for the sake of everyone. But what is called the adoration of the shepherds and the adoration of the Magi were most likely two separate events. In 1857, an Episcopalian seminary teacher used artistic license to write that familiar song, We Three Kings, for a school Christmas pageant. It became the first widely popular Christmas carol written by an American. But we recognize that there may not have been three. They probably weren't kings, and they almost certainly were not from the Orient. Now, for me, all these various artistic interpretations are simply ways to relate a story, and so that is good. But this story is also a good reminder that when reading the Bible, it can be helpful to focus on the essence of the story rather than all the details not actually provided. And by the way, it works the other way too. Sometimes details are included that can distract us from the essence of the story. Just as one example, during Bible studies, sometimes someone will ask why the Gospels of Matthew and Mark say that there was one angel at the tomb in the resurrection story, and the Gospels of Luke and John say that there were two. Now, I suppose the most logical explanation is that there were probably two, but Matthew and Mark just mentioned the one that actually speaks to the women at the tomb. Same goes for the differences among the Gospels as to the number of women at the empty tomb. We really don't know. But really, one angel or two, that is what we take from the resurrection story, the story that offers hope for all mankind. The bottom line is that we just can't know for sure which Old Testament and even New Testament stories are actual historic accounts, which have been enhanced through literary devices to better get across a message across to a particular audience, and which are figurative stories provided to illustrate a point. What we do know is that all contain truths that we can learn from and benefit from. So let's see what focusing on the essence of the story of the Magi might look like. We'll start with the Magi resolving to find the one that has been born King of the Jews. Despite not knowing exactly what they were going to find, how long the journey would take, and not even knowing where they would end up, they spent weeks, or more likely months, crossing a desert to achieve that goal. So now let's put ourselves into the story. How often are we willing to step out of our comfortable routine and pursue something that may not be easy, like the Magi did? You know, this is the time of year when many people make New Year's resolutions, a resolution to take a step forward in some way. Now, of course, making a resolution can be done at any time of year, but a lot of people have found it helpful to set a new goal at the start of a new and fresh year. Some make a resolution every year. Some of us have failed at it often enough that we become a little jaded and have given up the tradition of making a New Year's resolution. But here are some statistics from the Wiley Journal of Clinical Psychology for us to consider. In their study of New Year resolutions, they found that after 1 month, 64% of those who had made a New Year's resolution were keeping their resolution. After six months, 46% were still successful. So a little more than half had failed, but almost half were succeeding. They also found, and to me this may be the most important statistic, those who wanted to achieve the same goals but had not formally made a resolution were successful only 4% of the time at the six-month mark. You know, there is real power in the things that we say to ourselves. These statistics tell us that those who say, "I will do this," or "I am resolved to do this," are 10 times more likely to succeed than those that say, "Well, I'd like to do this, so maybe I'll give it a try." And those of us that say, "I just don't know if I can do it," don't even make the success survey. I guess we can take some satisfaction in knowing that we are right 100% of the time. We really can't do it. Is there something you should resolve to accomplish this year? Something you are willing to commit to with an "I will" statement? Something for your health or for a relationship? Something for your church or for your spiritual life? If the answer is yes, here's a couple of things to keep in mind. The same study found that the two most common reasons for failure were setting an unrealistic goal and not having a measurable goal. And those two things accounted for 2/3 of the failures to achieve a goal. So as an example, a good resolution might be, "I will start praying 5 minutes a day." It's realistic, and you can track if you're actually doing it as compared to a goal of, "I'll pray more this year." Are we willing to step out, to step forward, to resolve to do something important, even if we don't know for sure where the journey might take us? So back to our story, and to perhaps another lesson for us. As we read earlier, after crossing the desert and meeting with King Herod, the Magi found Jesus and his mother Mary. Some say in Bethlehem, others think it could have been in Nazareth. It doesn't change the story either way. And after finding Jesus, they quickly came to understand that this was not an ordinary child. There was something special about this Jesus. And so they gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold was a gift suitable for a king. Frankincense was a valuable incense used during prayer and worship, a gift fit for a priest. Myrrh was an oil often used in embalming, a strange gift for a baby, but a gift fit for someone who came into the world for the express purpose of dying for it. Looking at ourselves again now, do we take some time once in a while to seek to discover and to worship the Creator of all things? Do we think about who God really is from time to time? And then, because of who He is, and as a testament to our gratitude and love, do we offer God a precious gift? Now, what would be an appropriate or precious gift to God? Well, our worship, showing love for others in our daily lives, using our resources of time, talent, and money to support God's work in some way. Now, we might be thinking, well, you know, that all sounds good, and that's about what I would expect to hear. But honestly, I just don't think I have that much to offer. If we say that, perhaps we're too focused on our perceived value of the gift itself. We can't know what the impact of our gift might be. My mom is 86 years old now. She was born during the Great Depression. When she was three, the church where her dad was pastoring, my grandpa, told him that they could only afford to pay $4 a week. Well, you might say, well, that was $4 in 1938. So I went online and I found an inflation calculator and found that $4 a week back then is the equivalent of $79 a week now. Only $4,100 was what it would have been today. My grandma was so upset that there would be no once-a-year new dress for church or a new pair of shoes or a small toy for her only child. But she was determined that there would at least be something under the Christmas tree. So she took this old photo album, and over the course of several nights, she cut out old greeting cards, Sunday school teaching materials, calendars, and almanacs to make this book for my mom. Now, to my grandma, this wasn't much of a gift. To my mom, who later found out what was done for her, well, this book is the only thing that my mom kept from her childhood. And a few years ago, she passed it on to me. And now here I am, 83 years later, sharing the story with you. Sometimes the giver and the act of giving matter a whole lot more than the actual gift. Well, back to our story and to our final lesson for this morning. After seeing Jesus, the Magi planned to return to King Herod as he had asked, and then to take the route they knew through the desert to return home. But God had a different plan. He came to the Magi in a dream, and he told them to go home a different way and to not return to King Herod in Jerusalem. Now, this was risky for the Magi. King Herod was waiting for them, and he was a vengeful man, an official of the great Roman Empire. He was a jealous and insecure king that even executed members of his own family when he perceived them to be a threat to him. And it was his fear of a potential new king that led him to instruct the Magi to let him know where they found Jesus. Herod was anxiously awaiting the return of the Magi. But after their encounter with the Christ child, a child somehow not like others they had seen, they decided to follow God's leading, despite the risk and despite the change to their plans. And so they returned home a different way. So what is the essence of the story of the Magi? Well, maybe the writer of Matthew included this story in his gospel without a lot of details intentionally, because he wanted us to understand that it could be about any of us. It could be a story about three kings from the Orient, or 2, 3, 4, or even 12 wise men from the East, or a bunch of Methodists from Maple Grove, Minnesota. About any of us willing to resolve to step out, to step forward on whatever journey we need to take. A story about being willing to share whatever gifts we have, large or small, not as a duty, but as an act of worship. A story about taking a path that may not always be easy, one that will undoubtedly not always go as we planned, yet determined to follow wherever God is leading in some way. That is the story of the Magi and their epiphany, one that we are all invited to experience as well. Amen, and Happy New Year.